Beer Talk. Gespräche über und beim Bier.
Hello and welcome to another episode of our podcast, Beer Talk. Today, I'm far in the north, in Norway, but I meet people that even come from more north, from Iceland. Two new friends of mine, Bjarni and Sofonias. They are friends. They have a lot to do with the Icelandic beer history, and we are all curious to hear what they have to say. So maybe you introduce yourself a little bit to our listeners.
So I'm Bjarni Kristjansson. I'm a professor at Hólar University in north of Iceland, and there I founded a place called Bjórsetur Íslands, or the Icelandic Beer Center. And there we do basically everything related to beer, because beer is, you know, the reason why for our existence, as you know. So we brew and we have beer courses and beer introductions and have a beer festival. So that's what I do with beer.
Yeah, I'm Sofonias Jónsson. I'm another professor in molecular biology at the University of Iceland in Reykjavik. I got into brewing through my work on yeast genetics. We started collaborating on completely different things, and he sort of dragged me into the beer scene in the north. So I help him out in the brewery. Besides, of course, we also have our own course in Iceland on brewing, a 2 weeks course, and a course on applied microbiology. We do have a brewing exercise. Wow. It's a very popular course.
And so are people regularly taking part in the courses?
Yeah, it's annually.
Okay, so you produce new brewers in Iceland.
Yeah.
Yeah, not very many, but well, at least three of the people from the first 3 years we taught that course, one student per year become a brewer.
Wow, very nice. So, Bjarni, maybe a little first introduction into the Icelandic beer world for the German people. So as far as I know, beer was not so common in Iceland until maybe 40 years ago, something like that. So could you take us with you in the modern Icelandic beer history?
Yeah. I mean, Iceland, of course, has a history of beers and brewing from the settlement in the year around 900, where the Vikings came. And they were probably brewing similar beers as we've been tasting here in Norway, you know, these raw beers, you know, and so on. But then we had the little ice age, and you couldn't grow corn in Iceland. So it was only the really rich that kept brewing. And this went on up until the 19th century. But then in the early 20th century, we got the prohibition. So all alcohol was banned. The prohibition ended maybe 20, 30 years after it started, but they didn't allow beer. they thought it, so there were actually three reasons why they didn't allow beer. First reason was it's taxation. So there's lower, you get lower money for a liter of beer than you get for a liter of vodka. Secondly, was because of the Good Templars, the people who were fighting against drinking. They were very strong in Iceland, and they had to have something. And thirdly, because we were a Danish colony, we connected the beer very strongly with the Danes. So beer was banned until 1989. There had been brewing in Iceland before that, because we had an American military base. So Icelandic brewers were actually brewing beer for them, but they could not be sold in Iceland. So in 1989, the 1st of March, was the beer day in Iceland. We still celebrated the beer day when beer was allowed. A friend of mine had slept outside the alcohol store to be the first people to buy beer in Iceland. And then there were two main breweries that kind of kept going, Viking and Egils, were the name of these guys. And they are the biggest breweries in Iceland today. But it was it's similar as throughout the world. You know, we got this kind of American beer revolution coming in around 2007 to 2010. And since then, it's just been quite a quick growth in microbreweries in Iceland. And we have about 25 to 30 microbreweries now that are a mixture of being phantom breweries or having their own equipment. And our brewery is one of the oldest. We were founded in 2007.
Can you still remember your first beer?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. That was, I didn't like beer when I started drinking, so I drank something else. But it was a very hot summer day downtown, my hometown, Hafnarfjörður. And I was working for the municipality. We had been fixing water pipes for a restaurant, and they gave us beer, ice cold Viking beer. And I loved it.
So some love started for the whole of your life.
Oh, yes.
And what about you?
Yes, I actually do. Kalfur Grun about 13 and went to Eastern Germany on a pioneer lager. And we stopped over with a friend of mine who was half Faroese, and his grandmother gave us, the children, a Tuborgran. So I still remember that.
So, and then the... So,
as it goes to the Danish culture of beer drinking. She did not think this was anything unnormal.
So, and then the idea of a brewery started in you first? I don't know.
No, actually, I think in neither of us. So I founded this Icelandic Beer Center based on drinking beer, much more than... So I realized, I mean, at that time, we were getting all these different types of beer into Iceland. So I was tasting these different types. I said, this is fantastic to taste beer. You know, beer is fantastic. It's so diverse. You can drink, you know, no two beers are the same almost. So I said, okay, this is something that other people need to experience. So I said to my colleagues at the university, should we create a beer club? So I created this beer club. I went and I bought, I started by buying two boxes of beer, and there were two bottles of each type. And I invited people and just to taste. And the people were so happy after drinking all this beer and also this diversity that they all agreed to start this beer club. So I went out and I bought five different types of beer. And then very rapidly we got a little small apartment that we were sitting in, and I just kept buying beer and people kept drinking it. And it was like a, you know, mail order, as you can call it. So people just signed up, and once a month I would charge them the beer. And this was in 2007. In 2010, our friend Brotti, he was very keen amateur brewer. And we said, well, we have a little bit of money. Why don't we just create a brewery, a legal brewery? So because we were interested in everything related to beer, also, what does it take to become a professional brewer? So in 2010, we started our brewery. We bought a Braumeister 50, and we were brewing in plastic buckets. And then Brotti, he changed his interest what do you think it was, 8 years ago, something like that? And then I took over the brewing, and I don't know anything about brewing, so I got some professionals like Sophanias to come and help me.
So you came in, or did you? Have you been before at the meeting?
I have been there before. Also, we have been collaborating on other things. You know, we do research on fish. So I've been there quite a bit before, and besides, I actually had gone and taken a course with Brotti. So he offered, you know, weekend courses on brewing in the brewery. And we went there and brewed some good beer. So, and then I kept coming back. So
you were brewing in Reykjavik, right?
I was brewing in Reykjavik. Yeah, I had been brewing. I did my first old grain when I was doing my PhD in Switzerland, in the laboratory. Yeah. At that time, I was still allowed. And it turned out quite all right.
And the brewery is still existing?
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, it is all volunteer-based, and it's all kind of it's a hobby. So it's not a professional brewery. So, but we were the smallest legal brewery and are the smallest legal brewery in Iceland. So we were producing about 300 to 500 liters a year. But last year, we decided to expand a little. So we bought a 300-liter fermenter. So we are producing, this year we produce maybe 1,500 liters, and we can can them. And so we are starting to sell it a little bit to bars in Reykjavik or in our district.
What is the name of the brewery?
It's Björnsjötur Íslands. It's the same.
Ah, okay.
Icelandic Beer Center. Yeah. the house where we brew in, the Brauerei, or we call Hittuhus. And Hittuhus is the old word in Icelandic for brewery. It means basically a house with heat.
Hmm.
So that's I think it's still going strong. And we can only see upwards movement.
Stronger and stronger.
So the Icelandic people like beer now?
Yeah. I think, I mean, the Icelandic people always liked beer. But of course, when it was banned, you know, there was some smuggling of beer and all that. But at that time, Icelandic people, of course, drank a lot of vodka and strong alcohol. So so they focused a lot on strong beers like Elephant or something like that.
It's actually an interesting story. You know, in the years leading up to the to 89 when beer was allowed, so you could always buy light beer in Iceland, so 2.5%. That's what we deem alcohol-free beer. And then people figured out that actually if you mixed it with some schnapps or, you know, vodka or whiskey, you would end up with something more similar to beer. And then the bars kept developing this, and they added some extras, and they actually had made something that was somewhat close to a beer. You could buy it off a cap, off the tap in the beer, in the bar. And of course, our Templars are not happy with that. So after this had been going on for a few years, and it actually this fake beer became very popular, a law was passed that you had to mix all cocktails in front of the customers. and people figured out ways to do that so that it even tasted like beer. And then in the end, people saw how ridiculous it was not to allow just full-strength beer. So,
crazy story.
Yeah.
And yesterday you also told me about the Spanish wine, so I think that was also an interesting story. Maybe you can explain that also a little bit. Yeah.
Why alcohol was allowed in Iceland, you take it.
Yeah, so the reason why the prohibition ended in Iceland was because we were exporting salted cod, bacalao, to Spain. And then the Spanish government basically said, okay, we will not buy your fish unless you buy wine from us. So the Icelandic government started this governmental alcohol store, and they started importing red wine, white wine, and some stronger alcohol. And the story is actually that they were actually mixing it together and would just sell Spanish wine. And at that time, so all through the prohibition, people were making their own moonshine, you know, or beer and or something like that. So it was basically, we have the saying in Icelandic that something looks Spanish to me. It looks strange to me, but that was, if somebody was drunk in the street, you say, he looks Spanish to me, because he must have been drinking Spanish wine, because that was the only thing that was allowed. But Icelanders have had very bad drinking culture. Maybe it's a lot of the Nordic countries. So we work a lot, or people used to work a lot, in the small towns, working in the fish factories, you know, farming, and then would just get drunk on weekends, work all the week, long working hours, get drunk on the weekend. So I said, they would buy one bottle of vodka for Friday, one bottle of vodka for Saturday, and then it would be hangover on Sunday, and it just kept going. Just after the beer was allowed, people would keep buying two bottles of vodka. They would just buy four, 6 packs of beer. So you know, so the idea was that it was actually not getting better, but it has changed enormously in Iceland. So we have gone away from like teenage drinking. People are, of course, drinking beer more regularly, you know, throughout the week, but excess drinking has gone down extremely. So the beer has actually done very good for the drinking culture of the nation.
Did also the work of the people change? So is it not anymore so much in the fishing industry, maybe more IT-related things and things like that?
The fish industry is not as large, you know, proportion as it was. I mean, it was more than half of the economy. There are other things now.
Yeah, and the work has changed for sure.
Yeah. It's also much more automated.
If we see Iceland, we see always the whole island. And if you look closer to like a map, you see the big capital, Reykjavik, but also the other cities. So maybe you can take us a little bit through the island. So are the settlements more or less around the coast, and are there bigger, smaller ones? And where are the breweries mostly, and how does that look?
It's an interesting question about the breweries. The settlements are, or the towns, villages, are around the coast. Of course, more than half of the population lives in the Reykjavik area in the south. But the largest brewery, actually, Víking, is in, the third largest town in Iceland, but the second largest is basically part of Reykjavik, so it is the second largest town in Akureyri in the north. So that's where the largest brewery is. And the second largest is in Reykjavik, Egils. Mm-hmm. And those two are, of course, they are responsible for most of the production. But then the other small, the microbreweries are spotted around the villages. So it's sort of every village must have their own brewery now.
Almost.
Otherwise, it's not a proper village. Some of them are extremely small.
So that means for tourists, you can really do a beer tour around the island.
There is a beer map of Iceland sponsored by, what do we call the association in English?
Yeah, the Association of Microbrewers in Iceland. So there are about 25 companies, and they have published this beer map, and you can collect stamps, and you can make it a collective item to taste beers all around Iceland.
And this beer map I buy when I'm there, or I can download it?
You get it for free in a microbrewery.
Wow.
Microbrewers will have this map. You can pick it up, and then you just drive the road, and you get the stamp.
And what types of beer will I get normally?
Microbrewers all over the world, I mean, they read the same literature. They have the same recipes. So people brew. Of course, the big breweries, they focus on light lagers, right? German type beer. The microbrewery, they're experimental. So you won't know from day to day what you get there.
But, so both of the big breweries have kind of gone into this microbrewery business. So
that's true.
So the Viking, the biggest brewery, they produce about, I think, 6 to 9 million liters a year. They have a phantom company called Einstök. And people might know that beer because it's exported quite widely. So Einstök is their kind of a microbrewery type of things. And then Egils, the other big brewery, that I think they produce 4 to 5 million liters or something. They have something called Bork Brewery. And that's been very, very successful in developing like stouts and good micro brewery beers. But they also have the marketing of the strong company.
It's actually a nice concept for a big brewery to have, a in-house microbrewery for the brewers to actually let their creativity shine.
The beer market is a tough market in the world in general. The big breweries are tough, and that's the same in Iceland. So it has been very hard for the microbrews to get into the bars to sell their products. So like a friend of ours, he actually founded his own bar downtown Reykjavik to sell his own beer. And that created a little bit of a landslide of beer bars around Iceland. So like our bar was a beer bar originally. We had up to 100 types of beer for sale in our tiny bar. But in Reykjavik, you can now go to these really nice beer bars, either directly related to a microbrewery or just the open beer bars that invite the microbreweries and the big breweries. So the availability of high-quality beers has changed greatly.
And do the breweries all work together, or is there like a split between the big ones and the small ones?
Of course, I mean, like the big ones are in another league. There's actually one brewery that is sort of semi-big. It's an interesting concept. So that's not far away from Akureyri. And basically, they decided to... the owner was a fisherman, and then he had some injuries, so his wife had to figure out something for him to do. And she decided, well, let's make beer. You know, they had the buildings, and they thought, we like Czech beer. So they basically got a Czech brewer to help them set up a brewery. And it was actually, they made, slightly what they thought more higher quality lagers than the big breweries. And that's been done, actually. I know that the Viking brewery does the analysis for them and things like that. So they're not, they're friendly. They're helping them out. And then all the small breweries, I mean, it's a happy club. I mean, there's no competition or anything. People help each other out and visit each other and do call-ups and things like that. So.
Yeah, healthy competition, I would say. So they know of each other, and we created a venue that allowed these guys to meet and party together, and we have a beer festival. So the first weekend in June every year, we have a beer festival where we invite all the breweries to come. We get maybe half of them, something like that. Mm. And they come together, and the brewers. It's like a you know, the Uppskeruhátíð, we call it in Icelandic. It's like the harvest festival of the brewers in Hólar, because we're kind of a neutral ground because we are so small. We are not competing with anyone. Mm. And this was the first beer festival in Iceland that we started, and we've been doing it for what, 12 years now. And now there are 4, 5, 6 beer festivals that are going strong also. So.
Yeah, as you said, in June. So I think that there's a big difference between summer and winter, because you have so much daylight and so low daylight in the winter. So is there a difference in the behavior of the people, in the drinking behavior, or in the way people are going out and or drinking beer in general between the seasons?
Of course. I mean, people drink beer all year round. But then in summer, in June, when it's light all night, you don't have to sleep.
So they don't.
I mean, there's also, like everywhere, every brewery tries to make at least one or two Christmas brews, and there is Easter beer. And there's also a unique Thorrabjór. So it's basically, Thorri is the old month of the year, which coincides roughly February. And there is a few decades old tradition to eat traditional Icelandic food, which is terrible. But people are supposed to do that at least once per year in Thorri.
It's great food.
What is it? Let us know.
Pickled sheep's testicles, rotten shark, and things like that.
Dried fish, sheep heads, sheep testicles. That's all from the sheep, except whale blubber. And most of it is pickled in whey, so it's sour. Some of it is an acquired taste, and most of it is something you only eat once a year.
Can be a challenge.
Yeah. But there was one brewery that went all in this, actually more in than can be called healthy.
Yeah.
So they made beers with smoked whale testicles.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah. So that's very, very popular, but it tasted horrible. And they are now closed. Not because of this, but...
I know of no one who did not pour that beer down the drain after taking one sip. So yeah. Bad idea. Don't mix testicles in your beer.
But the idea was, of course, they sold well.
The marketing, yeah, exactly. They sold well, even if only to tourists that tasted it once.
Yeah. But that brings us to another question. Is there like traditional Icelandic ingredients, or even like maybe like a historic Icelandic beer that is now recovered or something like that?
I think we can say no.
No.
So the tradition died out. Mm. Because as Bjarni mentioned, we had the little ice age. The barley couldn't be grown anymore. And it was very expensive. Only the richest of the rich could import grain to do the brewing. And the strains then, you know, because of the prohibition, all strains died out, of course. So.
I think that's absolutely right. So there is no traditional Icelandic beer that died out. I mean, through the probation and throughout the years, bakers kept the brewing techniques alive, and the oldest breweries in Iceland are from the early 20th century, just before the prohibition actually, and those were founded by bakers, so they were just keeping the yeast alive, and they probably were brewing very traditional lager type beer.
I mean, they were of course influenced by the Danish German tradition, so it's basically lager type beer.
But the brewers today, many of them are trying to use like herbs and stuff from the Icelandic countryside to spice up the beers a little bit.
So there are herbs and berries and things like that.
Yeah, you can use, yeah.
There is actually one thing that is sort of specific to Iceland. That's children's drink that was very popular when we were growing up. It's a smaltur. Mm-hmm. It's basically a very lightly fermented dark, like a stout type malt.
With a licorice.
A little bit of licorice in it. Yeah. And actually for Christmas, we would always drink kvítur, which is essentially the same without the licorice. So it's just a light stout. Yeah. So that is still drunk. But mainly, it's a children's drink. So you grow up drinking, something like a beer.
I mean, similar customs, for example, in Finland, where they make this beer and they ferment it overnight, you know, and they serve it to the children at weddings and so on. But in Iceland, they would bottle it and sell this. And that's very good. And when I started to go abroad, they always try to find this malt type of thing for Christmas.
Hey, we're just talking about the little ice age. So now we have the climate change. Is there something happening in Iceland? Do you see? Is it getting warmer?
Yeah, it is. And people are growing barley again now. So we do have breweries that are brewing purely from Icelandic barley. They've tried that. But there's no malt house in Iceland.
No.
People at the agricultural university, they have experimented with malting. I mean, it's doable. But no one has taken the step to set up a malt house. So most of the production of Skov is, of course, with imported grain. But people use, you know, part of the mash with unmalted Icelandic barley, or you can brew with just enzymes. We've tried that. I mean, it works. Beer was excellent, but it's hard to work with in a brewery. It becomes a thick porridge.
We do a lot of beer tastings. So we get groups and give them 7 to 10 different types of beers and tell them the history of beer and, you know, culture of beer, both in Iceland and abroad. And one thing we talk about is the Icelandic barley, because often these are farmers and they will always ask this question. Do you brew from Icelandic barley? And you say, well, Icelandic barley is made to create cows. So it's full of proteins instead of full of starch. So sometimes you say it's a little bit like seal hamburgers in Newfoundland. If you go to Newfoundland, you can go to a restaurant and say, seal hamburgers, only 10% seal meat. So you can say Icelandic beer out of Icelandic barley, only 10% Icelandic barley. Yeah, so it's a...
But at least, yeah.
It is definitely growing. But in general, because we are biologists, we see the effects of the global changes. And it's not necessarily that it's warming. It's becoming unpredictable, the weather. Mm. So for example, the week after our beer festival in June, in Holar, where I live, there was 20 centimeters of snow, on the 10th of June. And then the year before, we had 20 degrees plus in January. So that is also tough on the barley industry. So this summer, for example, was horrible for the barley because it was very cold summer and very wet summer.
Cold and rainy.
So it's a challenge. There is a little bit of hop production in Iceland now, but mostly in greenhouses. So there is actually somebody, a small brewery, that has produced a truly Icelandic beer with Icelandic barley and Icelandic hops. But that's an exception.
Yeah, but that's a great story.
Yeah.
And for the people who want to visit Iceland, what would you suggest? What is the best time in the year to go?
If you're hunting for beer, well, of course, you know, if you come in winter, it's unlikely that you're going to be able to drive around the coast without, you know, hitting some icy roads and, you know, put yourself in danger. So if that's your plan, to visit all the villages, all the small breweries, then I would recommend the summertime. Early spring is pretty best.
From May until September, I would think.
It's very hard to advise on when you can expect the best weather because, like Bjarni said, it is changing. So the last few years, we've been having rather good weather early in the spring and then maybe in September, and then the summer has been horrible, but that's usually not that way.
But if you go, I mean, there's a lot of people that come over just for a weekend, you know, and a weekend in Reykjavik and the areas around there is fantastic for beer lovers, because there is about half the microbreweries are still in the capital city and the other half is distributed in the small towns. So you can make a very good like pub crawl in Reykjavik, visiting the tap houses of these microbreweries. And most of them have a tap house either where they're brewing or close by. So that's a, and Icelandic brewers love to talk about beers and brewing, and so they're very often in the brewery themselves. So you can sit down with the owner or the brewer and have a chat about their beer and so on. So it's a, and many of them offer also, you can come and see the brewery, you know, to book it ahead of time and so on. So that's also fun.
Yeah, that sounds like a plan. Perfect. Maybe last question, we are here in Norway. at the Farmhouse Beer Festival in Hornindal. And how do you see that? What are your experiences? How do you think it? What beers did you like? What is your impressions?
So, yeah, how shall I answer that? So we've been interested in the Norwegian tradition for a long time because, of course, they kept alive our tradition. And actually, some of the literature that is cited about, you know, what the Norwegians know about the history of Norwegian brewing is actually from Icelandic literature because, you know, that was all documented in Iceland. Sometimes a little bit later than actually, the books are written maybe 200-300 years after the fact, but still it's the best documentation that we have about how things were. And we, of course, we read the net. We happened across Lars's. Everyone knows who is Lars.
Yes.
I think that listens to this.
They know Lars Garshol. We already did a beer talk episode with him.
Yeah, so we of course, like others, read his blogs, and I was interested in trying this Quake. So I got it from the Type Culture collection, a few different strains of Quake, and we actually brewed. We tried without having ever tasted the Norwegian corn ale. We tried to brew some because Einir that they use instead of the hops grows in Iceland. And I must say, now that I have tasted the real thing, we were pretty close.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm happy with that. So that's one of the reasons we decided to come here, just to get the authentic stuff and see how close we were.
And it's been just a fantastic trip also. I mean, just like yesterday we went and participated or watched them brew. And I think that was absolutely eye-opener for us. It was fantastic to see. And the night before we went to this gathering in this brew house and tasted some of the beer just straight out of the fermentation vessel. And that was also great. And the beer festival is very much fun. And I like both the traditional, but I also like the smoked ones. I think that's a very interesting taste. So they're not all good, but most of them are like is the usual, and a lot of them are very kind of. It's a surprise how good they are. So.
It's surprising how varied they are. So much variation of although it's all the same basic recipe. Yeah. Of course, the Quake strains are quite different, give different tastes. But the main thing is, people, their heart is in it. You can see people are really proud of the beers, and that's,
It's fantastic.
Fantastic to see.
Yeah, I think also. So that's what's also my experience. It's really great to see their effort, their mood, and everything. And also, I think the smoky component brings us together a little bit because that's my background. So that's a fantastic thing. And so, thank you very much for your time, for the information about Iceland. We will put the links in the show notes, and probably a lot of our listeners will maybe come to you and enjoy the beer. Thank you.
Beer Talk, der Podcast rund ums Bier. Alle Folgen unter www.biertalk.de.